This is a summary of Bubble or Revolution by bestbookbriefings.com. Bubble or Revolution, the present and future of blockchain and cryptocurrencies by Neil Mehta, Adia Ghash, and Parth Dutroya. 1. Blockchain and Bitcoin. In 2008, a computer scientist who went by the name Satoshi Nakamoto presented Bitcoin, a digital currency that allowed people to exchange money without having to go through a bank or any other financial institution. Today, blockchains and cryptocurrencies are household names. But to better understand these technologies, we must first study the history of money as a whole. The trouble of money. For most of human history, there have been two ways of holding value: owning physical items of value, cash, gold, livestock, etc., or having a trusted institution or authority track your money for you. Both forms come with their own problems. Tangible forms of value are easy to steal and hard to store, and they can't be used for long-distance transactions. To solve this, humanity invented a middleman money that was mediated by trusted institutions or authorities, like a bank or a local chief. Most forms of money today fall under this category. For many good reasons, a bank can be trusted to keep your money safer than you can. You can make fast and easy long-distance payments, and it's harder to counterfeit money when there is a trusted authority that keeps track of how much everyone has. But there's a reason many people and stores still stick with cash. Middleman-mediated money, which we'll call M3, comes with its own limitations. When your money goes through middlemen, you need to play their rules and pay their fees. Visa and MasterCard take 1-2% of the money you send to a merchant, and PayPal will take about 3% of the money you send internationally. You can only use M3 if the middlemen allow you access to it. Using an M3 institution also means that you're entrusting them with your money and your data, and financial institutions have a bad track record with keeping the latter secure. In 2014, hackers stole the data of 100 million JP Morgan customers and 100 million Capital One customers in 2019. An intangible currency. In today's digital world, what we really need from money is convenience and intangibility. Is there a way to cut out the middleman but hold on to intangibility? Bitcoin is a digital currency, which makes it intangible. In theory, it's middleman-free because it doesn't rely on banks or financial institutions to keep track of people's money. Instead, Bitcoin utilizes a network of computers all around the world to keep a shared public ledger. Imagine a Google spreadsheet of every transaction. This is what's known as a blockchain. Every Bitcoin user has a copy of this blockchain, and it updates every time someone pays with Bitcoin. Of course, transactions need to be verified before they're submitted into the blockchain, or else people could just make up whatever transaction they wanted, instead of going through a middleman. This verification is farmed out to members of the Bitcoin community. Any Bitcoin user can use their computer to verify valid transactions and add them to the blockchain. Transactions come in batches of blocks that contain a few thousand transactions each. People don't do that work for free, of course. For every block you verify, Bitcoin software will create an according amount of Bitcoins and pay you with them. This is known as a block reward. Since Bitcoin sees itself as a digital version of gold, this entire verification process is known as mining, and verifiers are known as miners. You can think of it as mining with your computer, instead of with a pick and a shovel. What defines a cryptocurrency? The spreadsheet analogy was a simplification. Bitcoin stores its blocks of transactions in a linear chain. Bitcoin uses a mathematical technique called hashing in order to give each block a sort of numerical fingerprint, which identifies it as a unique link in the chain, hence the term blockchain. In order to verify a block, miners need to find this hash. For security purposes, Bitcoin designed it so that the process of finding a hash was time-consuming and difficult. It's completely randomized, which makes it impossible to reverse engineer and difficult for a legitimate miner to obtain. You basically have to guess a long string of letters and numbers until you get the correct one. At the time of writing, hashes make it so that you have a 1 in 66 billion chance of mining a block. You can go through this process with a regular computer, but it would literally take billions of years. Serious miners use powerful computers with ultra-specialized chips called application-specific integrated circuits, or ASICs, which are specially made to run the hash algorithm very quickly. For a person to access their bitcoins, they need their very own private key and address, which are easy to generate, but made incredibly difficult to forge or guess through another series of complicated mathematical filters. Every transaction you make is signed by your private key, which everyone can see to confirm your identity. Because all transactions are publicly listed on the blockchain, anyone can see everyone's past exchanges and balances. You can think of it as a transparent safe. Anyone can see how much money is inside, but only the person with the key can access it. No other form of money provides this kind of transparency. It gives analysts the tools to understand the condition of the Bitcoin economy, helps to track down cyber criminals who use it, and makes it easy to prove that you've made a payment. But this comes at the cost of privacy. All in all, Bitcoin uses a lot of math in its various forms of cryptography, the science of keeping information secure by encoding or encrypting it. For this reason, Bitcoin is called a cryptocurrency. 2. Bitcoin economics. Bitcoin has come a long way since 2008. Billions of dollars worth of bitcoins are exchanged every day, with each one being worth thousands of dollars apiece. There are countless stories of teenagers turning into millionaires thanks to a clever, or lucky, Bitcoin investment. But isn't it strange that these digital inventions are worth anything at all? It didn't happen overnight. At the start, these were just clever toys, but over time, people started to believe that they were worth enough to spend real money. The price of one Bitcoin has leapt from 0.4 cents each to, at the time of writing, over $30,000. That's a 7.5 million increase in little more than a decade, with the price quadrupling each year on average. No conventional financial asset even comes close to that growth rate. How could this have happened? Intersubjective realities. The philosophical problem that many people face with Bitcoin is one that's common to most forms of money. If you're stranded in the middle of nowhere, a $20 bill is a useless piece of paper. But if you're in a grocery store, you can exchange it for all sorts of goods and services. The reason for this comes down to what the historian Yuval Noah Harari calls an intersubjective reality. You think that money has value because you know that other people think the same way. The supply of Bitcoin. Another way that Bitcoin maintains its value is by restricting the Bitcoin supply. The number of Bitcoins that are in circulation is artificially limited, and the rate at which they are being produced decreases every day. The block reward that miners get is the only way to introduce new Bitcoins into the economy. Bitcoin software automatically calibrates the difficulty of mining in such a way that one block is mined every 10 minutes, on average. The software has the reward every 4 years. In 2008, the reward for mining one block was 50 Bitcoins. As of May 2020, it has now fallen to 6.25 Bitcoins per block. If you follow this trend, the Bitcoin supply will effectively hit a plateau by the mid-2030s. In fact, 85% of all available Bitcoins have already been mined by 2019. This strategy of slowing supply growth makes sense, as it ensures that Bitcoins are always scarce and therefore always valuable. What's interesting is that the supply might actually fall, eventually, because of Bitcoin's decentralized system. If you lose your private key, there's no way to recover your Bitcoins. No authority will reset your password or make new Bitcoins to compensate. There are unlucky individuals who have stored their private keys on hard drives and subsequently broken them. By one estimate, around 30% of all mined Bitcoins have been lost. The demand for Bitcoin. While the supply of Bitcoins is easy to quantify and predict, it's much harder to predict the demand for them. In the early days of Bitcoin, word of mouth and internet publicity, both good or bad, was the primary factor in raising its value. In 2013, the value of one Bitcoin jumped from $13 to $1,100 due to the US government's takedown of the Silk Road, an online drug market that only accepted Bitcoin. But ever since that spike, Bitcoin's trading volume has proven to be fairly consistent, despite its wildly jumping price. Our take is that once Bitcoin had become a household name among investors, its familiarity stopped being the main driver of its demand or price. What then? are the new growth factors. One theory is that when the stock market falters, Bitcoin serves as an alluring alternative. But the fact is that since Bitcoin's price has little to do with the stock market's performance, serious investors don't see Bitcoin as a strong defense against a stock market crash. We have two more realistic factors in mind. One is that Bitcoin is becoming increasingly easier to invest in, with multiple websites, apps, and even stockbrokers willing to accommodate the potential buyer. Another is that the majority of Bitcoin users are speculators, hoping to turn a profit. Bitcoin's volatile price, relative lack of regulation, and lowered barrier of entry makes it an exciting and relatively easy investment for speculation, especially among younger people. Bitcoin can serve as both a currency and an investment, but considering its limited direct uses in the real world, it better serves as an investment vehicle. The consensus with investors is that investing in Bitcoin is like day trading stocks, extremely risky, but with a tremendous potential for growth. There's a whole industry of experts that's risen up to analyze Bitcoin in order to predict future price movements. As you've no doubt seen for yourself, Bitcoin breaks into the news the most when analysts believe that its price will surge, whereas currencies are celebrated when they reach stability. Investments are more exciting to speculators when they spike. As such, while Bitcoin may not be the future of money, it might well be the future of investing. 3. Bitcoin blunders. The scaling problem. Bitcoin was originally intended to serve mainly as a payment method, particularly for small transactions of a few dollars or less. But for a Bitcoin transaction to go through, it has to be chosen by a miner from the memory pool of all unconfirmed transactions to be put into a block. Bitcoin miners charge a fee for every transaction. The more transactions there are hoping for a place in the block, the higher they can charge. The fee doesn't depend on the size of the money involved in the transaction. This means that the average fee for a transaction hovers between 50 cents and $1. But during spikes or drops in Bitcoin's price, when people are eager to buy or sell, the fees can surge to over $55. Another limiting factor is the waiting time. Bitcoin can only process 12,000 to 15,000 transactions every hour. At one point in December 2017, the memory pool contained over 200,000 unconfirmed transactions, which took an average of 16 hours to be confirmed. This may be less of a problem for a sufficiently motivated investor who is looking at a profit of thousands of dollars, but it would be inexcusable for, say, someone who wanted to get a coffee. Fundamental problems. Due to the fact that a block can only be made every 10 minutes on average, Bitcoin as a whole can only handle about 3 to 4 transactions per second. This pales to the tens of thousands that Visa and MasterCard are capable of. Bitcoin transactions take a minimum of 10 minutes to go through, and in order to be secure against attackers who seek to copy the blockchain, merchants are actually advised to wait for 6 more blocks, or an hour in real time. While Bitcoin prides itself on its security against technological attacks, it's as vulnerable to human error as any other technology. A Bitcoin wallet is only as secure as its private key is. If someone steals that, then Bitcoins are theirs, and there's nothing to be done about it. Anyone with poor security practices can get hacked, blockchain or no. With that said, there are offline ways of holding onto your Bitcoins, known as cold storage. These often come in the form of paper wallets, little cards that hold QR codes that lead to your private key and address, or hardware wallets, a USB stick that can plug into a computer when needed. Some hardware wallets even require physical buttons for confirmation. Paradoxically, the best place to store this cutting-edge financial technology is offline. Mining and climate change. The Guardian's Alex Finn summed up Bitcoin's mining algorithm as a competition to waste the most electricity possible by doing pointless arithmetic quintillions of times a second. While the wastefulness of mining does serve to keep Bitcoin tamper-proof, Hun is right in that it wastes a lot of resources, with the competition growing more extreme by the day. Since your chances of mining a block is proportional to your computer's power, miners are locked in a never-ending technological arms race. By the University of Cambridge's estimate, Bitcoin's annual energy consumption in 2020 was over 80 terawatt hours, which was more than most countries in the world, including Switzerland, Singapore, Israel, and New Zealand. The mining work required to verify a single Bitcoin transaction uses enough electricity to power an average American household for about 22 days and produces 300 kilograms of carbon dioxide and two golf balls worth of e-waste. As per one report, 80% of all Bitcoin mining today uses renewable. As per one report, 80% of all Bitcoin mining today uses renewable energy, but excess of any form is still a cause for concern. 4. Public and private blockchains. Online voting. Voting machines are easy to hack, and quite often they fail to keep track of votes correctly. An ideal voting system would be one that keeps a rigorous and transparent count of votes, is impossible to tamper with, and works online. It's the perfect application for blockchain technology. The concept of blockchain voting depends on tokens, digital assets whose movement can be tracked. The government would issue a voting token to every eligible citizen, who could then send it to the address of the candidate of their choice. With blockchain voting, anyone could count the votes to verify who won, and the record of votes would survive, even if only one computer had a copy of them. Because it's decentralized, even a government wouldn't be able to interfere. The main challenge with blockchain voting is deciding who gets a token. Lists of registered voters would be easy to hack, and are generally provided by the government. Estonia solved this problem by giving every citizen a mobile ID that was tied to their smartphone. 94% of the country has these secure IDs, so online voting would be possible. That said, Estonia has a population of less than 1.5 million. This approach may not work as well in larger countries. Another problem is that anonymity would not be a guarantee. Anyone would be able to see you voted for which candidate. As such, blockchain voting is still in an exploratory phase. Walmart versus foodborne illnesses. Walmart versus foodborne illnesses. In 2018, E. coli tainted lettuce hit the United States, with more than 200 people getting sick and 5 dying. It was the most extensive and deadly outbreak to hit the produce industry. The problem lay in the fact that no one who got diseased lettuce could track it back to the source farm, because the entire supply chain from the farm to the supermarkets was opaque and inefficient. The entire system was paper-based, and every company involved only needed to trace the products it handled one step back and one step forward. This meant tracing something back multiple steps required talking to several companies. As such, it took the authorities over 3 months to figure out the source of the E. coli. Even after it had been identified, no one could be sure if the lettuce they had was safe, since it was so hard to track. Shortly after this, Walmart announced that it would overhaul its supply chain, requiring every company that sold them leafy greens to put the movement of their products on a Walmart-owned blockchain, known as the IBM Food Trust. Every transaction would keep track of data like the product's lot number, the time and date, and their origin and destination. The results of Walmart's new system were staggeringly positive. With the supply chain now digitized, the format for storing data was standardized, and Walmart could trace any given shipment from one of their stores all the way back to its farm of origin in 2.2 seconds. Walmart could know exactly who was involved and where they were at each step. None of these benefits are specific to food. Any supply chain could benefit from the efficiency, speed, security, and transparency that blockchains can provide. Supply chains have the potential to be the killer apps of blockchain, a case where blockchains are definitively the best choice in the market. Xbox and game royalties. If you're publishing a game on Microsoft's popular gaming console, the Xbox, you need to work with a small army of external contractors. You need to write complex contracts for each of them. A typical game could require hundreds. This poses a logistical nightmare that requires huge teams of accountants to wade through piles of spreadsheets, emails, and papers. For Xbox publishers, settling all royalties could take up to 45 days. Xbox wanted to automate these computations and bring all the data into one place, so they decided to build a blockchain-based royalty settlement system. The complex paper royalty contracts were converted into smart contracts, the complex legal language turned into precise mathematical formulas. Automated smart contracts are far more efficient, and because the code that determines the royalty rate is accessible to everyone, any contractor can check to see if they're getting the money that they deserve. As a result, Xbox reduced its royalty settlement time from 45 days to mere minutes. Its finance team's workload was reduced by 70%, and the time required to onboard new game publishers was reduced from multiple days to 15 minutes. In short, it was a win-win situation for everyone involved. The groups that have found the most success with private blockchains are not scrappy, agile startups, but tech behemoths like Walmart and Microsoft. Why have these slow-moving incumbents gained so much more from this disruptive technology? You could argue that implementing a private blockchain is more of a social challenge than a technical one. Building a blockchain has always been the easy part. The difficult part is in wrangling your suppliers, traders, publishers, and team into complying with the new system. For all their slowness in picking up new technologies, big businesses are very good at convincing large groups to change their behavior. In short, it's not the technology that matters, it's getting people comfortable with change and working out whatever legal and financial difficulties emerge over the course of changing. 5. Cryptocurrency policy. A big draw for early adopters of cryptocurrencies was their complete lack of regulation. You could avoid taxes, invest without filing paperwork, and send money without the red tape. But this wasn't because cryptocurrencies exist outside of the scope of regulation. In fact, their effect on the financial space makes them prime candidates for regulation. The fact is that cryptocurrencies operated under the radar for several years, and when they came into public eye, lawmakers were caught by surprise. But now that they've had time to understand the situation, they've started to create and enforce cryptocurrency policies. Crypto bans. When it comes to the regulatory headaches the cryptocurrencies pose, many countries have opted for the simplest solution: ban them outright, particularly as a reaction to Bitcoin's use in money laundering, tax evasion, drug trafficking, and ransoming. But this comes at the price of losing the many beneficial and legitimate uses for cryptocurrency. As such, many larger countries have taken a more nuanced approach. The United States treats cryptocurrency like any other form of value and applies the same kind of regulations. China's Bitcoin drama. China has an interesting love-hate relationship with cryptocurrency. China is a huge player in the Bitcoin arena. 80% of the world's Bitcoins are mined there, and it produces several of the most popular ASICs for it. With that said, China's heavily banned much of Bitcoin's ecosystem. In 2013, financial institutions like banks were banned from handling it, and in 2017 this ban extended to cryptocurrency exchanges as well. So private citizens turned to virtual private networks or VPN to access Japan or Hong Kong-based exchanges instead. In 2018, China instructed government task forces to guide the shutdown of mining operations, albeit with no specific timeline. They also banned all Chinese citizens from trading cryptocurrencies entirely. It's a very strange approach. China benefits greatly from their prominence in Bitcoin, and yet it wants to shut it down. People suspect that it's because they want to develop their own cryptocurrency, so they would prefer to eliminate their biggest competitor. But the fact is that Bitcoin still thrives in China, despite their powerful government's heavy restrictions. This goes to show that regulations on cryptocurrencies are hard to enforce. Crypto users are often more tech-savvy than enforcers. An individual nation's attempt to crack down isn't guaranteed to succeed, because traders and miners can just easily move their operations to more lenient countries. Places like northern Quebec and Mongolia have cheap electricity and need the economic boost that miners give, so they've been somewhat friendlier to them. Significant change in crypto regulations can only happen if countries start working together to enforce them. Venezuela's state cryptocurrency. In 2018, Venezuela was in the middle of a political and economic crisis. Inflation reached rates of 60,000% a year, which meant that prices more than doubled every month, which devastated businesses and savings. At the same time, President Nicolas Maduro's government was being pummeled by international sanctions. On December 2017, Maduro announced a state-backed cryptocurrency called the Petro, whose value he claimed would be backed by the country's oil reserves. Unfortunately, it was a total scam. The Petro isn't a functioning currency, it has never been used or traded, and no exchange or stores accept it. The white paper that outlined the cryptocurrency had very few details and was very inconsistent in its definitions. The Venezuelan government also has a terrible history of devaluing currency and making arbitrary exchange rates. So why launch it? Most likely, as a way to get around U.S.-backed economic sanctions. Thanks to its untraceability, a cryptocurrency would allow people to invest in Venezuela without the sanctioning countries noticing. The goal was to raise $6 billion, which of course failed. Governments' relationships with cryptocurrencies can cut both ways. While they may be used to break a country's financial laws, a country can also use it to break international financial laws. The capabilities of cryptocurrencies are a double-edged sword that aid legitimate transactions as much as illegal ones. Since anyone can create their own cryptocurrency, there's no single source for international lawmakers to crack down on. International governments need to be proactive in regulating all cryptocurrencies if they want to do something about illegal activity. 6. Bubble or revolution, blockchains, cryptocurrencies, and other related technologies will change the world, but not through anarchy, as many might believe, but through pure efficiency. Cryptocurrency has met more success as it plays nice with banks and governments. It is slowly becoming a mainstream vehicle for investments, but only because it's being regulated enough to make financial institutions happy. The future, it seems, is not in community-run coins that replace banks or dismantle governments, but in highly regulated coins that integrate smoothly into the existing systems of society. As nice as the ideal of a decentralized, government-free form of currency might seem to some, it's not quite feasible to build an economy around it. The real success seems to be coming from private blockchains run by large companies, not from public blockchains. The ultimate irony of crypto is that it is now succeeding by becoming the exact opposite of what its creators intended it to be. For a technology to be widely accepted and to drive social change, it needs to accumulate legitimacy. Overhauling the world's financial system is beyond crypto's creators, who were always better at solving technical problems, not social ones. Perhaps it would find more success on a clean slate, but Earth has had millennia to form its social systems. Change is always an extremely difficult and prolonged process, and most people just want a system that works today. In the short term, cryptocurrencies will see their values spike and crash. Blockchain apps will come and go. Despite that, they definitely have value, and they will absolutely change the world, just not the way they were intended to. Whether you prefer to read or listen, we have something for you. Visit bestbookbriefings.com now for more summaries.